Good morning, everyone. My name is Ricky Ellison. I'm the founder of the Missile Defense Advocacy Alliance, a group that I founded in 2003, right after our country withdrew from the ABM Treaty. I've been involved with missile defense since 1980. Had some interaction with Dr. Teller, Bill Graham, before the Reagan SDI movement. We are very active in the world. We have advocated missile defense in 47 countries, all 50 of our states. We've been to over 450 missile defense sites and platforms. And we are all about education of this topic, and this group of systems, because we believe missile defense makes our world a safer place. And certainly today, in the heights of the tensions that we're seeing in Asia, around North Korea, the demand for missile defense is as high as it's ever been. And we have capability that's defending populations in Republic of Korea, in Japan, in Guam, in all 50 of our United States. So today, we're taking the opportunity to look into the boost phase of missile defense capabilities. Our systems today are deployed in the mid-course phases and the terminal phases of the ballistic missile flight. And it's the first, I think, serious opportunity that our government, the Department of Defense, has taken a very serious look at platforms and systems within the first 300 seconds that a ballistic missile takes off and is intact before it starts dispersing its warheads, countermeasures, and decoys, that we have an opportunity to take that out in those first 300 seconds. The first 90 of those 300 seconds are inside the atmosphere. And we obviously have platforms inside the atmosphere that may have capability to do that. So today, we're fortunate to have, I think, three great speakers and presenters. And we want to give them each an opportunity. And then we really want to open up for your questions and understanding of this issue and what we're going forward with. Our first speaker today is in charge of the F-35 integration with the United States Air Force. He's a former pilot. And he's a U.S. Air Force Catholic graduate, and we welcome Tom Layton.
Thanks, Ricky. Appreciate it. So it still pains me to hear former pilot. That's okay. I'll get over that someday. So when I first got the invitation to chat this morning about the F-35 and boost phase missile defense, I said, kind of scratched my head for a couple minutes, talked to some friends up at Northrop who make the distributed aperture system for the F-35, and which in itself is a great system. So I'll take a couple of seconds to talk about the DAS itself, what it's capable of doing, and the potential applications for missile defense. So the DAS is midwave IR, 360 degrees, six cameras on the F-35 is the application that we're using, which knitted together create a all-around-the-aircraft IR view of the world, if you will. So there's multiple applications in how we're currently using it. One thing that Northrop Grumman has looked at is boost phase detect and track as well. So that stemmed out of a need in the program, a requirement in the program for rocket and artillery detect, so that we could integrate the defensive countermeasures of the aircraft against those capabilities. And Northrop did some follow-on IRAD work, taking it out into the boost phase detect for ballistic missiles. So they actually did an exercise in about 3 years ago, October of 2014, with a DAS on a stick, if you will, with a Link 16 capability on the ground in Hawaii, a missile actual launch, and then their avionics test bed airborne also with the DAS, and they were able to detect a launch, give that data via Link 16 to the airborne asset, which then used that data to start to track the missile in boost phase, was then able to generate weapons quality track information, and exhibited the capability to send a Link 16 J3.6 message to, which would have been capable and accurate enough for an Aegis cruiser to use. So that's the great news. The good news is it would potentially bear some discussion and exploration of actually using in the F-35. The probably not so good news is right now it's not part of the current program of record for the F-35. And certainly would require integration and some time. I think Northrop's estimates would be, you know, from start to integration would probably be in the 3-year time frame. And then there's still some hurdles to work over. Realize that exercise had a ground-based distributed aperture system near the launch site, which was able to detect launch. Theoretically, you could detect launch airborne, and they've done some studies and tests on that. But that would certainly have to be rounded out. So then if you extrapolate into the future, what you could potentially do with the F-35 and how you would operationally use it, because of that 360-degree nature of the distributed aperture system, you don't always have to be pointed at the potential launch locations. So it's fairly easy at that point to detect launch, start to track a missile, and you pass that off to other shooters. I would say at the tactical unit level, a couple of problems would have to be overcome. Really from an air tasking order, you know, where do you set up caps? How long do you set up those caps for? What's your strategic warning and indication that it's time to set up those caps, and what phase of the conflict are you in? And then really at the squadron level, you know, what is a training plan? So missile defense isn't currently part of the F-35 primary missions, so you would have to add that to squadron's missions. They would have to train to that capability. And granted, it's probably not a huge training burden, but it would take away from other missions. Find the CFAC in the AOR, I would also have to make a decision to have F-35s in a cap looking for missile launches, vice, stomping down the door and going into the country of choice to actually perform some of that deep strike missions that really is the bread and butter for the F-35. So it's an interesting playoff. Do you use that capability in more of a standoff role and a defensive role, or you know, are you able to do that and then move forward into a strike role, perhaps even at the point of impact? So the other interesting piece that came out of Northrop Grumman's involvement in that exercise was actual point of launch and point of impact estimates that were fairly close, and you could potentially determine point of launch and then go after that with either those same assets if it's close enough or other assets. So a lot of interesting questions were raised, and still some work to be done to actually bring anything to fruition. And just add money, and it's probably potentially able to do so. Yep.
Thanks, Tom. During those 300 seconds, the Missile Defense Agency has done some testing of systems over, I think, the last decade to prove out some of these technologies. We've done the from an Aegis platform ship, from early ascent with SM-3 capability to an NK, I think an F-15 with ARAM capability, and airborne laser, chemical laser that was done off the 747. None of those programs are programs of record, but the technology has been proven inside those first 90 seconds. So today we have the integrator and probably the best in the world, certainly in the Western world, with the mission to take all the best resources across this country, from the labs to the services, to look at applications, to be able to use all those applications to effectively put forward a system or systems at that blue space technology to develop that. There's no record, program record today of any blue space capability, but there is research going forward on that. So today we're very honored to have the Deputy Director of the Missile Defense Agency, Rear Admiral John Kelly.
Thank you, Ricky. I think my microphone's on. All right. I was hoping for a green light, but it turns red when it's on. First of all, I'd like to thank Ricky for having us here today. Known Ricky for a long time. No one's got a bigger heart than Ricky, but when you actually get past his great personality and his love of warfighter, he's always honoring our sailors, our airmen, Marines, and soldiers. It's something that we really value. So Ricky, thank you for all that you do. He also confessed this morning that he's a grandfather, so his call sign is now Grand Poobah. And because I'm sitting next to call sign Vulture, in case you didn't know that. I'm a lowly surface warfare officer, so I have no call sign. I have an after-hours call sign, but I'm not going to talk about it. All right. So thanks for having me here. Lieutenant General Greaves, my boss, sends his regards. He would probably start off this conversation talking about the threat. That's always where he starts, because that really does set the requirement. And Ricky kind of talked about the threat. Vulture talked about it a little bit and what we're really trying to go after here in the early phase of flight. But I'm going to kind of just start off by talking about the mission of the Missile Defense Agency. You know, it starts with deploying that layered defense capability. Depending on where you're at, sometimes you think only of Patriot or THAAD or Aegis or ground-based missile defense. That's a layered system, purposefully layered, so that we can take on ballistic missiles in all phases of flight. So within our own mission statement of providing that layered defense in all phases of flight to protect the homeland, protect our allies and our friends, implicit in there is getting to the hardest phase of flight, which is boost phase. It's a tough one, so I'm going to talk about that here in just a little bit, but I'm going to weave it into the priorities of the director. And but first, I'm going to say hello to the good Congressman.
Hey, thanks for coming. Sorry.
Go ahead. That's
okay.
So thank you, sir. It's good to see you here. So from a priorities perspective, if you were to ask General Greaves what he's worried about, he'll tell you, number one, it's about reliability, right? Building reliability to build the confidence of the warfighter. So our systems that are deployed today are in-service systems. It's not just about missiles. It's about the detect, control, engage sequence. So it's our sensors, it's our command and control, and it is our interceptors. So building in that reliability so that our warfighters are confident in what they have, I will tell you that they are confident and we are confident for dealing with today's threat, right? Very confident that we can take that on. The concern that we would have, if you were to ask General Greaves what keeps him up at night, what keeps me up at night, probably all of us here at the table, is what's happening tomorrow, right? What is the projection of that threat? Where is it going? Are the investments in the right place today? And that's kind of where I'm going to drop anchor when we get to boost phase here in just a bit. Second priority is capability and capacity. And I'll emphasize again that capability and capacity is not just about the interceptor, right? Interceptors don't launch on their own. You have to see what you're going after, right? So the sensor architecture is critical to what we do, right? Whether it's terrestrial-based radars, radars on ships, sensors in space and in the atmosphere, they're very important for what we do. The control systems, that's where all the magic occurs, right? Someone asked me recently about innovation. I'll always talk about what our government labs, our industry partners do when they sit down in the dark room and work on the algorithms for the control of the system, because that's where the magic occurs. That's what extends the capability of a great sensor. It extends the capability of a great interceptor. So capability and capacity is across that whole detect, control, engage sequence. And then the last priority, the third, because we like to think in rules of three so that I can remember them, is going after the advanced threat. And if you think about where the projections are going and what we're going to see tomorrow, which is why we're worried about where things are going, that threat gets more complex. Someone mentioned to me before we started, like, hey, what happens if they throw a barrage at you? Well, the barrage and the raid thing has always been an issue, right? So, but doing ICBMs and raids and barrages is probably not the issue for today, but it's definitely an issue for tomorrow as they continue to build out their inventories. We had a multinational conference last week in Boston. I had the honor to sit down not only with industry from the U.S., but to talk to people from different areas of the country. And I will tell you, it's the first time in an international engagement where we all had a common problem. I will tell you that it doesn't matter if you're in the Pacific or if you're in the Middle East or if you're in Europe, you are worried about having a target on your forehead, right? And so that changes the way we're doing business. It kind of really just changes the thinking. So when Ricky talks about the importance of going after that early phase in that first 300 seconds, it's an important piece for us to go after. We're very good at going after the mid-course, and so if you understand how ballistic missile defense works, right, there's the boost phase, and there's the ascent, and you get to apogee, and it's a parabolic kind of track, right, if you believe in the simple threat, right? And then it comes back into the atmosphere, and you deal with it in the terminal phase. That's what I call the Hail Mary phase. So you have that, and you got to deal with it, right? So very good at mid-course, very good at terminal, and we have to go after boost phase. Why is boost phase so hard, and why are we interested? We're interested because we need to change the cost curve. We're well aware of the cost of the systems that we have deployed around the globe today. We know they're expensive. How do you get to that? Well, you start to look at things like directed energy, right? There's great promise in directed energy. And if you're as frustrated as I am that we're not moving as fast as we could, it's because we really need to invest in that area. And specifically for us, it's all about scaling. It's about scaling up the power. And why do we care about power? Well, if you're going to go after a boosting missile, you don't want to be flying over enemy territory. You don't want to be in the range of the air defense batteries. You want to have standoff range. So power gets you that standoff range. And in our case, most of the agencies, most of the services have unique applications for directed energy, right? So back in my Navy days, we had lasers on ships. Why did we do that before we had the power that we really wanted to have? Because we wanted to learn how to operate it. We wanted our sailors to get comfortable with something other than hard kill, right? They're so used to dealing with electronic warfare and dealing with their hard kill systems that dealing with an optical system was totally different, and we learned a lot. Ricky mentioned some experiments that we did in the past. You may remember the airborne laser, right? Learned a lot about high altitude flying and shooting down boosting missiles. It's not easy, right? The con-ops are really difficult. First of all, and I think Vulture was kind of getting into this, you almost have to have exquisite intelligence and indications of warning. You got to know where these launch sites are and where they're going to occur so that you can have your sensors and your weapons in place to deal in boost phase. That is hard. That is not easy. So we're working on the technical side of the Missile Defense Agency. Our combatant commanders and our services are thinking through all of the issues that occur, whether it's the first launch, right, because it does matter where you're at, or if it's after the first launch, right? The actions you take might be different. And that's really an operational question that the forces are dealing with today. But if we can produce the technology, understand it, put the investments in it, and determine whether or not it's feasible to get to a higher power laser at the weight that can be carried by a long endurance aircraft, then we have an option that we can provide the warfighters. And that's really where we're focusing our time, is getting there. So before I turn it over to the Congressman, I'm just going to go back to the importance of the overall kill chain. I want you to think about intelligence, indications, and warning. Very important for boost phase. You got to understand where it's coming from so that you can place your sensors and your assets in the right place. The detection of our sensors, right? We do this all the time. Every test that we do, we bring out every sensor that we've got and we put it on that target to include unmanned vehicles with optical sensors. So we're learning today, we're capturing the data today. Ricky said, hey, not a program of record, but I will tell you that the investment in the technology, we're working that, and we are collecting data and characterizing how we would operate as we scale that power up and get ourselves into a high altitude aircraft. And then you come through the command and control. Command and control, absolutely critical, right? This is where you task your sensors. This is where you do track management. This is where you initialize the weapon. This is when you launch the weapon. You determine the earliest time to launch, latest time to launch. Critical piece, often forgotten, but I'm a combat systems guy, so I like to talk about it. And then the interceptor, absolutely critical to have it initialized. It's got to know where it's going. It's got to have the error taken out. It's got to know where it's going, or else it's going to have to really pull some hard G's to get to the target. So all of that full systems thinking is what we're thinking about as we get into boost phase intercept. So thanks for having me here, Ricky, again. Congratulations for being a granddad. I love it. It's great. And I can see there's a few of you ate bacon today, so don't get too sleepy. All right. Good to see you, sir.
Hey, good to see you, too.
Thank you. Our next guest is a congressman from the 50th District in California. He served three terms in U.S. Marine Artillery, which... There you go.
King of Battle.
I think we have one thing in common. We both served the trestles in off of San Diego. great guy, and he is one of our emerging leaders in the United States Congress on boost phase, directed energy, and a leader in educating the congressional members on this important position. So, Duncan, it's all yours.
Ricky, thank you very much. On the People's House, you know, in the other place, we do work and things, and get up early and come talk, and get things done, get the House side better than the Senate side. Okay, that's been it. All right. So here's where this came up. There's a few there's a few places, and I'm happy to talk about directed energy. I'm all for it. Anything that can hit something going up in the air, I'm for. Iran and North Korea have the same type of, let's call it the same geography, in that Iran's got to launch northwest over Kuwait to get to Europe. Okay? Kuwait's a great place to shoot down boost bays for Iranian missiles. North Korea's only 150 miles wide. So what we're talking about here doesn't work anywhere else until we get to that point, to another country that's like North Korea or Iran. North Korea's only 150 miles wide. That's why boost phase works in North Korea. Very simply, what we're trying to do is shoot AMRAAMs off of F-35s in the first 300 seconds that it takes a missile to go up in the air. I'm working with guys out of Los Alamos and Livermore, and what I've come up to is a brick wall called the Missile Defense Agency and other organizations within the U.S. government that have their own plans. They either want to do Navy ship direct energy, the Navy happens to like that one, the Air Force happens to like airplanes that do direct energy, and we haven't done these yet. We're close, my friends. We're only $10 billion away in 2 years from getting it right. The Navy wants to do ship-directed energy. We're going to have that at some point. We're going to have rail guns like we do on Navy ships now. The Air Force wants to do directed energy out of airships. What we want to do is shoot down missiles as they go up. By not containing North Korea, by shooting down missiles that are on the ground or going up, we're basically going to put them in the same category, policy-wise, at the highest level as Russia. When they nuclearize and they go, I'm just reading through some of his notes, the old Russian rockets, you had one missile and it would pop off about five warheads. And you don't know which one's real, you don't know which are fake, you don't know what kind of defensive measures those have too. That's why we have mutually assured destruction with Russia. We don't talk about shooting down Russian missiles in boost phase. You have mutually assured destruction. You shoot at us, we're going to shoot at you, and we're all dead. China's like that too. We don't talk about shooting down Chinese ICBMs. You shoot at us, we shoot at you, and we're all dead. We're going to let North Korea get into that category of, okay, now that you have them, you have too many for us to shoot down, and you shoot at us, we shoot at you, and we're all dead. The point of boost phase shoot downs is to contain North Korea, specifically in this case, so that we don't get to that point. So that you stay in the conventional warfare category and you don't go into the nuclear warfare category. By hitting them and cutting them off at the legs, and we'll get into the technicalities here, but by cutting off North Korea at the legs and making the rocket basically fall down on Kim Jong-un's head, as General Hyten puts it, would really discourage them from even testing, let alone shooting missiles at people, but even testing them. So here's what's easy about this. And by the way, I've got all the math for this. It's all open source based off things you can get off James. I've had, there's guys at Livermore and Los Alamos that came to me and said, we have it figured out, we have the math. You can use an F-35 with AMRAAMs and shoot down boost phase missiles. It's that simple. An ICBM coming off, whether you have cloud cover or not, is like an act of God. An ICBM igniting and shooting off into space is like an act of God from space. You can see it from anywhere. Could be halfway around the globe in a satellite and still see an ICBM taking off. You know that they're shooting them. North Korea won't shoot west because they can't hit us if it goes west. They've got to shoot like east, northeast. So we're not going to be chasing the missiles either. That's a big argument by MBA, by PhDs that are very smart. We're not chasing missiles either. We know where they're shooting. We know where their trajectory is. I'm assuming because you're all here early in the morning that you have some, that you understand the way that trajectories work and stuff. You can shoot down missiles coming out of North Korea in boost phase with caps of F-35s and AMRAAMs. And I've got the math to show it. That's basically why I'm here talking this morning. That's what we should be doing. One reason that we're not doing it is because it's not a billion-dollar program. Billions of dollars programs. That's one reason no one's interested. Right? Because you don't need anything else right now. You have F-35s, you have AMRAMs, and you can shoot these things down as they go up, but you got to do it now, as in today. The point that he made about command and control, I think, is actually the biggest obstacle to what we're doing. We have the best sensor trigger system in place in the world as a nation for the entire world. We know what's being shot where and where it's going. We have that information. To give a pilot the ability to shoot an AMRAM at a missile which may be going over Japan into the ocean or may be coming at us, that's a big deal. Because right now it takes a whole lot of people to sign off on the North Koreans just launched a nuclear missile at the U.S., what do we do now? As you can imagine, that goes up the chain of command to somebody, right? And they have to make a decision on what to do then. It's really hard for us, and I say us meaning U.S. military, to say, I'm going to give a major in an F-35, I'm going to let him pull the trigger and shoot an AMRAM at that. And while the AMRAM's in the air, we'll determine whether that missile, in the next 30 seconds, we'll determine whether that missile's going to come at us or one of our allies, or it's going in the ocean, and then you got to determine if the AMRAM can blow itself up in the air or turn around and go into the ocean itself. You can make it do what you want to. That's the hardest part, I think, for the U.S. military right now, is to say, we're going to let that F-35 pilot pull the trigger, because you got to do it fast. You have 300 seconds, roughly. That's with liquid fuel. Solid fuel, you get it's even less time. The F-35 pilot used to pull the trigger and shoot the AMRAM. And then we say, good to go, and it blows it up. Or we say, no, it's not good to go. That was just going to go in the ocean. And they make the AMRAM explode itself, or they turn it around, or do something else with it. That's a scary, scary thing that will probably never happen with the U.S. military. Delegation down to the lowest point is not a thing that they do when it comes to nuclear war, which they shouldn't. Probably the biggest obstacle you have to boost phase is not the technology. It's the command and control system. It's the CONOPS, as you said. That's what I think the biggest obstacle is. You got a lot of pushback because nobody wants to give that major in F-35 the ability to do that and have them be wrong. If you haven't noticed, you can't do anything wrong anymore. Nothing. You're kicked out of the military, you're kicked out of whatever. So you can't do anything wrong, and to push that power down and that authority down, I think, is a scary thing for the U.S. military, for DOD, for the SecDef. They don't want to do it. Anyway, that's where I'm coming from. That's why I'm here. This is something that's doable now. I don't care what NBA says. I don't care what organization and which part of DOD says that they've got a $10 billion program. If you just give us more money and more time, we can do this. More money and more time, we can do this. Everybody's got their game, but unfortunately, everybody's in the box. Everybody that does missile defense right now is in the bubble. And I don't care if you don't think you're in the box, you're in the box. Especially if you're 25 years in the military, you're in the box. And I think it's up to things like this, and it's up to us, to come at that from different angles and say, this is doable. It might not be a $10 billion program that takes 5 years, then a big contractor gets that job. It's doable right now. And it's hard to get things through to DOD that are doable, that are easy, that are cheap, that are efficient, and that already exist. Because that makes nobody happy. There's no retired general that works for name your company, name a company. There's no retired general that works for company A who says, I would like to do that thing that costs no money, that doesn't give me a contract. No one says that. But you retire, you go to work for a company A, B, or C, then you push what they have a big program doing. And that's a problem here. That has stopped us from doing goose phase shoot down and really focusing on the reality of now and the art of the possible, which we could do right now, shooting down these missiles. Mattis is looking at this, Admiral Sweeney, that Mattis' guy, they all know this stuff, but they're being told by the NBA and other folks that they have a special way to do things. That's it, Ruby.
Okay.
Let's shoot them down.
Thanks, sir.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Thank you. We can open it up, but I also want to make sure that we open the discussion beyond the F-35 and the AMRAM solution, that we look at UAVs, Global Hawks, Avengers with 4,000-pound laser solid-state that can burn holes through the skins of missiles in under a second from standoff ranges of 100 miles or so. So we need to just broaden the discussion and also tailor it down to some of the issues that you have with that. So with that, we'd like to open it up for any questions on boost phase.
So Ricky, I'm for, I mean, I'm on the Armed Services Committee, been on it for about 10 years. I'm for future programs that do direct energy. I'm for rail guns. I'm for lasers. I'm for nets that grab things or something. Whatever you want to do, I'm for that. And I'm for putting money into that and working to the future. If you don't contain Korea now, while they have a certain number of warheads, then the shoot down boost phase doesn't matter anymore. We'll be using what we're talking about now and the technology for the next country. Korea is a very small window and it's closing. Because once they get enough warheads or more advanced systems, we won't even be talking about this. This won't even be an option anymore. We don't talk about this with Russia, do we? There's no boost phase talk with Russia. It's not going to shoot down Russian missiles in boost phase. It's impossible. The same thing's going to happen with North Korea. This is a limited window. So I'm here, I'm pro-theory. I'm pro-theory and testing and R&D and acquisition and good things. But I'm also pro right now with North Korea, you're in a very small window. And if something works to hurt them now, we should do it now. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to do anything. We're going to have to treat them like a peer country with nukes, which is insane.
Let's open up for questions.
Okay. Hi. I'm Pete Bythrow. I'm an independent consultant today working for Los Alamos National Lab.
You know Greg Canavan, then?
Yes.
Yeah, that's who I'm talking about when I say scientist. Greg Canavan's the guy that's talking to me.
As well, I spent the previous 16 years as the chief scientist for Measurement Signatures Intelligence, so threat systems was our bread and butter. And I hate to give my whole history, but I spent 20 years previously at Johns Hopkins doing missile defense. So I agree with your premise that there are ways of doing airborne shoot down of missile systems, and that the command and control issue is one of potentially internal politics within the military. But there is a technical problem, and I did studies with Johns Hopkins decades ago on boost phase intercept of Scud missiles with an F-15 cap using AMRAAM and or Advanced Phoenix. What we found was that to specifically identify missile launch, and this is considering all existing systems today, you needed to know that it was a missile launch and that it was a valid target. And that had to be given to the pilot through Link 16 or whatever within 9 seconds to do a 150-kilometer standoff launch. That meant the 300 seconds is great for an ICBM class system. When you start backing off, the time gets shorter and shorter, and the travel time of your interceptor velocity of your interceptor is the same. So you have to have the technology to be able to tell that it's a missile launch, identify it, and hand that off verifiably to your pilot or your system, whether it be an automated system on a UAV, and do that within roughly 9 seconds. And the times may be different now than the study that we did then, but it's not 30 seconds. It's a very short. That requires a lot of technology innovation in the systems that we already have. I'm not saying you have to buy new systems. You have to use them differently. Again, another problem politically. So, my question is, do you know of anyone that's working on that new technology? give the system the information it needs quickly enough in order to close the intercept.
So with the F-35 and the sensors we have on our missiles now, you can do that now. Passing targeting information is literally what the F-35 was invented for, to be networked and be able to see everything that everybody else sees. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the F-35 is very good at targeting. And I could be wrong. Please jump in.
Sir, I think the issue that's brought up is the difference between identifying a launch and actually getting it to a weapons quality track solution for the pilot. So geometry does matter. So even a couple, 10, 20 degrees off of actual azimuth becomes problematic.
So the MBA, one of their big arguments against this, by the way, to your point, is that what if the missile moves as it's going up? Okay, because the AMRAAM's got its own sensor and can home in on whatever it wants to, right? It's a smart missile. If the ICBM moves as it's going up in the air and it jigs, say it jigs, which it doesn't, but say that it does, then you're totally right. Right now, you're able to pass the target information to pilots instantaneously. Pilots can have it on their screen. Yes, no?
Well,
please.
I don't.
So, hey, Congressman, I love your passion. It's great. So I'll push back on a few things. So, first of all, I'm not a PhD from MBA, but I do have a master's in physics, and I have looked at Dr. Canavan's math, and it is very intriguing. It's a surprise to me that you think MBA say no. We're looking at a range of options, and I tell you, the aircraft launch of missiles is not off the table for us, and it's certainly being considered as part of the ballistic missile defense review that's in place right now. We have gone through the math. I've personally gone through and walked through the equations that Dr. Canavan's laid down, and I'll tell you, there's a lot of assumptions in there, and they're not all bad. They're good assumptions in there, but I always worry about again that exquisite indications of warning. If you just look at, you can see it out in the white news, the white press today. Launch sites vary, right? So are you going to have the aircraft in the right position to do that? That's a pretty short range missile. And that seeker was not designed for that kind of target at those velocities. So there's work to be done. We're not saying no. We're just saying we've got to make sure we've got indications and warning right. We have to make sure it could be that there's another missile that has longer legs to it. I'm a missileer. I've spent my career designing and firing missiles at sea. And I will tell you, when you go to the farthest range that missile will shoot, it's out of gas. And there's no maneuverability capability in it. So we're assuming full extended range of the max capability of the AMRAAM. And I will tell you that we need to do the work on it. And so we're not saying no. We're just saying there's work to be done. There's atmospherics we have to worry about. There's gravity to worry about. There is where the plane is going to be located for trajectories, you already said it, are going to go north, and that's over hostile territory. So although it's a skinny country, the launches are going in a direction that would put those aircraft in a hostile situation. So we just want to come through all those issues. We do a lot of small programs. We're not afraid of programs that are fast and easily deployable, that are less expensive. You know, and by the way, Congress kind of tells us what we're going to do, and we get our requirements from the combatant commanders. So MBA is not choosing and picking which programs we're going to do or not do. So I'll leave it there if that helps.
I'd like to make just one comment.
It's all good. And I'm not a physics guy either. All that I know is from reading your guys' stuff.
I was hoping you'd be a geek like me.
I was in computer science information systems. I can program.
That's good.
Not the stuff, the geometry and triangles. No.
My comment is that the study that we did in the 90s on airborne intercept was assuming air supremacy over the region. So
yeah, it always depends on where you are in the fight, you bet.
Within the 150 kilometers of the
right
target.
So again, I'm coming at this not as somebody who's in the system. And I get all your points. MDA was not prepared for North Korea. We have been let down tragically by DOD and all of our smart guys that do missile stuff. Because the time is now. And there is no answer now. The answer now is Trump trying to get the Chinese to do nice things for us so we don't have to do anything. MDA did not fix this. They've had multiple programs, they've stopped, they've started, they've stopped, they've started. We should have had a solution for this, and we don't. It's time to come at this from a different angle then, and at least try what is possible now. I understand all the different, there's a lot of problems with everything.
So when you say this, you're talking about boost phase.
I'm talking about boost phase.
Okay, because you wouldn't say that you don't have confidence in the system to take down what North Korea throws at us today, right?
I would say I have confidence in the system for us to shoot down a limited number of ICBMs.
Okay, that's fair. And I'm with you. I think we need to go after the boost phase. You know, it's in our mission set, right? All phases of flight. So we're good at mid-course, we're good at terminal.
So what's going to happen is once they get more than a limited number of ICBMs, this conversation's done. It means nothing.
I'm with you.
This is all for fun. We have a window. We weren't ready to take advantage of this window as a nation. And that by itself makes me think that there's something off here. So let's say it takes a new sensor on the AMRAAM.
Okay.
Sure. Let's say it takes a new booster or something.
It's
right?
Gonna need more gas.
So let's say this needs a couple of other things. To me, that would have been priority number one in terms of the Missile Defense Agency looking at our threats, whether it's Iran or North Korea, who's really gonna having to deal with our peer competitors at the same time. This would have been something where we said we got to find a fix to this now. Now, there's not going to be a fix. We're going to wait until North Korea has the ability to outmatch our limited boost phase capability. Then we treat them like Russia. We say, if you shoot at us, we're going to nuke you too. That'll be our policy.
Look, we don't want to live in that world either. But I'll say again, our requirements come from the combat commanders, driven a lot by what the Hill directs us to do. Mm-hmm. Right. So if you think this is a priority,
there's
tons
of priority. There is priority. So you got to read the NDA. There's tons of senses of Congress. We talk about this a whole lot in our bill. So we do. But that's not our job. We're doing tax reform, we're doing healthcare, we're doing all kinds of stuff. We have been severely let down by the defense agencies that are supposed to do this stuff as Congress. We did not know how outmatched we were in our inability to hit them launching. And by the way, this goes for a lot of other places, space. It's amazing how outmatched we are in space. And us in Congress, you know,
we are all in.
We just have personal space. We just have personal. We're not the smart guys. And I've been here for 10 years. You've been in the NDA for how long?
9 months.
For 9 months. I've seen guys come and go. Now, I don't mean that in a negative way. I've seen guys come and go. They all have great thoughts, but nothing gets done. Because you get 2 years in your job as a colonel or an admiral, and then you're off, and you're going to add a widget to whatever system, then you leave. And we still haven't gotten to this yet. This is still pie in the sky. According to you, it's pie in the sky. So the answer is there is no answer. And that's a very dangerous situation for us to be in. So we're just talking theory here. This is like being in a war college with a bunch of admirals saying, what if we could do this for America? Well, that's great. We should write an essay on it. But there's no answer.
Let's move on and get some other questions here and move on some other aspects of missile defense. So I appreciate the dialogue that's going forward. Tony?
Can the five BMD Aegis shooters in the 7th Fleet AOR, can they shoot down the ICBM in boost phase? I'm a little unclear on that.
They weren't designed to shoot down ICBMs, no. Nor were they designed to do boost phase intercepts.
But they weren't designed, but they haven't been retrofitted with some new technology that allowed them to do.
Right, they have a lot of capability, but they were not designed, nor are they deployed today, or positioned to take down ICBMs. So it's really an operational question for my friends out in the Pacific.
No, I understand that, but a lot of stories about what they have in the Pacific implies that they can do that. I'm missing the plans of the ships. You're giving an honest answer that they're not equipped to do that. I just want to get that on the market.
Right, yeah, those ships and those missiles were geared towards short range, medium range, and intermediate range. And that's what we've demonstrated. We have not demonstrated an ICBM intercept with Aegis ships.
And let me ask you, I mean, what's great about this too is that all the stuff I'm talking about right now is on class, right? I've talked to really smart people that work for General Mattis. They don't like directed energy because they said all they do is make their skin on their missile tougher, and it'll be really hard to get through it. Truly. Because you got a laser, and a laser works with a certain steel dimension. As strong as a laser is, it goes through steel, right? I mean, we've got, once again, I'm not a scientist, but
you're talking beam control.
A soft laser doesn't go through heavy steel, right? You got to have a big laser that's really hot and fast to go through heavy steel. It's the same argument kind of when you go to solid state rocket fuel for the North Koreans. Your 300 seconds goes to what? What is that? You know, we know this more than me. What is your 300 seconds average of a liquid fuel drop down to if you go solid state?
I don't like to talk about numbers in this environment.
Solid state rocket fuel is much faster, right? So even the idea of
zero indication of warning on a solid rocket motor because you don't see any refueling, right? So now you've got that problem again of not knowing where they're going to launch and when they're going to launch. And again, are the aircraft going to be there?
Right. So that's a great point. And when it comes to lasers, it's a great point too. They'll just make their stuff better, and the lasers won't work anyway.
Right. So they'll make them heavier, and they'll go slower.
Right.
We'll get more time on target. I mean, these are all trades, right? And so again, I want to say just because you poked at MDA so much, there are other agencies, there's U.S. Air Force Red Team, there are other agencies that have looked at Dr. Canavan's math and the concept. And I don't think anyone's saying no. We're just saying there's lots of problems to be solved here, and we got to understand it, and we got to set that as a priority. I'm with you. If the nation thinks this is what we ought to go do, the Missile Defense Agency is not afraid to move forward and go do it.
It's been a long time here hearing there's lots of problems with this, with anything. Literally, anything the Congress or the Senate goes to DOD with, because we're not in DOD. That's its own little world. You'll always get pushback from anything that is not their idea or their that they bought into.
I think it really is. I get what you're saying, but just to be fair here, it's an incredibly complex part of the missile launch phase. Incredibly complex. You are over enemy territory. You don't know where they're launching from. You said solid missiles and liquid missiles. There are different indications and warnings for those. This is not an easy problem, and I don't think there's an easy answer.
Well, the answer is right now there's no answer.
Dave? You know, great discussion here, because I think we've highlighted some gaps we have, right? One, the fact is that the North Korea issue is something across a long time that we haven't addressed, and the time is shrinking, I think, from most people's perspective. So I think at that strategic level, reference to policy, it is true, the operational level, how do you work the con ops or whatever like that, and then at the tactical level, how do you empower the rules of engagement or understanding the peer threat? And I think we're kind of talking past each other, but what the representative is kind of talking about is, hey, how's this Manhattan project, or how are we going to pull something together when we have a certain window to really think about this? Because having been a planner and stuff that, in the Iraq invasion, had to really work about who's on first and who's the lead from the West to try to defeat the Scud issue and all that kind of stuff. Really important to kind of, how do you empower, how do you get the con ops, how do you start really working these aspects, because it's not a solution. And I think what I'm hearing is that we got to get it, at all phases, from a strategic level, what's from the administration, what they'll give us the authorities to do. At the tactical level, how do you work the algorithms and the apps and the math that we have confidence that we can do it, and then how do you empower the tactical level to develop the con ops that General Brooks or the empowerment of what would happen if anything does happen on the peninsula. So I think this is a good discussion because it kind of shows the gaps that we've had in talking past each other that we have not had. And the new capability we brought on with the F-35, not designed to do this, but has some capability maybe to affect at that contained area, because you're saying it is a finite. It's unlike most times we do global issues, this is a finite issue too, then how do we come to some solution sets that could give us some capabilities?
So I'm an engineer, right? I try to find what the problem is I'm trying to solve and then go work the solutions for that, right? So if we want to say that the operators on the aircraft are too young and we don't trust them and that's the issue, that is not the problem to solve, in my opinion. All right? We have commanders in charge of destroyers today that have the ability to launch an SM-3 today to protect our nation. And I'm not worried about that 35-year-old being in command of that ship. I wouldn't worry about the major being in command of releasing weapons on an aircraft. So that's not the problem to be solved, right? So if that's not the problem, and I don't believe it's MDA saying no, that we won't go after a program with a solution today, right? So that's probably not the problem. What is the problem? It is the complexity of that part of the mission. That is a hard mission, and it includes indications and warning and good intelligence, command and control, and having your assets in the right place. And I don't think you want your assets overflying China.
So let me just throw, I'm going to diamond out General Hyten, because you know who General Hyten is? HYTDN.
Strategic Command, great guy.
I'm going to diamond him out. We talked about boost phase 6 months ago. We went through all of this in my office. And I said, so where do you put this? Where do you put what I'm talking about? What agency? He said, nothing. He said, there is no agency in the U.S. government that can do what you're talking about. He said, maybe DARPA, maybe. I said, MDA? He said, no. He said, there's nowhere where this can reside and grow and do it fast. There is no agency in the U.S. government right now. We're not made for it. That's not how we do testing. That's not how we do acquisitions. Call me in 5 or 6 years. That was his answer.
Okay, so I've never heard that, right?
But that's okay.
We'll peel the onion a little bit on it, because I think it's an interesting point.
He said,
right?
There is no way for this program to go where it can get done quickly and be effective quickly.
I think it could, but where you're at right now in boost phase, right, if you really think about the problem you're trying to solve, it crosses over from defense into attack operations. That's hard, right? And so you're right. The Missile Defense Agency is not geared to do attack operations. And so when you get into that world, it's different. And so we have the bureaucratic problems that you kind of outlined earlier. But I think that's really, again, when I'm looking for the problem to solve here, you're crossing into attack operations. We're crossing into the intelligence world, right? That is different for MBA, right? We don't control aircraft, and we're not about going in-country and doing attacks. We're a defense organization. That's what we do. I will tell you, though, with the unique authorities that Congress has given us to move very quickly, that if you needed an agency to move forward with that sort of concept, Missile Defense Agency is well geared to do that. And I'll agree with General Hyten that, there isn't a perfect agency.
It's not just MBA. He said there is no place for it to reside and grow quickly.
Yeah, I've never heard him say that, but it's interesting. I'm glad you dined him out, not me.
Yeah. Sure, thank you.
Can I just make another statement? I want to thank the Congressman for his very honest and compassionate view of the world. We are kind of whispering to each other. This is a national conversation that we ought to have. I have the same concern that you have, is that they are going to progress down the path to where it's no longer a conversation about a region and containment. It is going to be one of those where they're at the table, right, as a superpower. That is not where we want to be. So, Congressman, thank you.
And not only that, I mean, General Mattis, Secretary Mattis said it's unacceptable. It's unacceptable to have a nuclear North Korea, and I'll also dine on Secretary Mattis. In his first meeting, or first couple of meetings when he was talking North Korea and missiles, from what I understand, he had one question at the end. Boost phase. That was his one question. Okay, so how do we shoot them before they go up? That was it. This is what you have to do to emerging countries. You have to be able to shoot their stuff down. You have to. Nuclear emergent countries that are bad actors, because you have an option of doing nothing, of shooting them down, or allowing them to become a more proliferated nuclear country. That's it. And I think we're at the stage, if you can't shoot them down, then again, we're talking for fun. We're just here for fun, then, because the window is literally a year or two. That's it. I might not be here in a year. You're going to move on to your next thing in a year or two. That this is a small window with an explicit, specific problem. This is not theory talk. This only works for North Korea. It only works for Iran, out of Kuwait. And that's really it. And I think it's hard to shape DOD programs to a specific country when you're talking technology and acquisition and testing. That's really hard. It's easy to do it globally. We need a directed energy weapon. Yes, we do. And we can use that for all kinds of things, right? It's hard for DOD to go, we need something for this problem set, and we're going to get a solution to that. That is difficult for them to do. And that's why right now there is no boost phase intercept.
So let's go back and talk about why boost phase intercept is important, right? So we talked about the phases of flight. Why are we kind of honed in on that today? That is because it's before the threat complex becomes more complex, right? So there's a real motivator for us to go after that boost phase before countermeasures and other things occur. And it's all about keep out, right? So if it's coming towards the homeland, taking it out as early as you can, I'm all for that. So we're looking at a range of options to deal with that phase. And it is probably the hardest phase of missile defense, next to terminal. I don't like sitting in the Hail Mary region. So, okay. Thanks.
By the way, I'm such a hawk on North Korea. I mean, the only reason I think it's a big deal that this is so important, they are the number one existential threat to the U.S. right now. They are. No one else is going to shoot nukes at us. It's just them right now. I think they are the number one threat that we have. We're crazy and could have the ability to hurt us, right? That's why this is important. But again, it's fleeting, right? I mean, this is an answer that we may answer. We're back here next year.
We won't.
Talking about it. About what the new programs are and how we're going to stop the next North Korea, it'll be too late.
But there's no point in the history of our country that this has been force functioned on us to deal with. The North Korean crisis is forcing a new way to play. And you got to let go of the past. You got to let go of your one team. You got to bring all the best resources in here. It's going to force you to challenge yourself to put the best on the field. We've got to do that now. We can't do what we've been doing. As both of you said, over the last decade or two decades, we're at a different juncture with the national security of our country and our allies at stake. And we need to do everything we can across the board, across all agencies, across our Congress, to get capability in there so we don't have a world war. We don't have what looks like it's going to happen if we don't do this.
And by the way, the apple's purple. You're purple, right?
I have a purple aura.
You're
yes.
Your joint.
Yes.
Your joint. If you ask the Navy what they want, they'll tell you what they want to shoot down missiles from their ships. You ask the Air Force if that's a good plan, they say no. We're going to shoot down missiles from planes. You ask the Army if those are good plans, and no. The Army wants to shoot down missiles from the ground. That's why this is too hard for the services to do, because everybody's got a stake in the game. I don't care whether you say you're objective as heck, no one's objective. Everybody's got their bubble and their box that they are born and raised in, and it's hard for guys to step outside of that. This is a Secretary of Defense and presidential policy down. They're going to have to make this call. General Mattis will have to make this call, because there's no way to cut across the party lines. I mean, we're asking for tripartisanship, because the Marine Corps doesn't have anything to shoot down anything. We just use your stuff, right?
But we ask you to protect us. We do
thanks
have
for protecting
the Missile Defense Agencies.
No, thanks for protecting the Marine Corps. But really, it's a tripartisanship thing, because you have every service has their thing, and all the PSMs and all the program managers in each service have what they want. The retired admiral or general that now works wherever has his program that he wants that he's pitching to his buddies that are still in the Navy. That's how life works. You'll never get an overall solution unless it comes from the SecDef down. This is a SecDef issue. It's above all of our pay grades.
Admiral Hill. Has anyone, to your knowledge, done a end-to-end con-ops study as to how you would dedicate or arrange for a sea-based F-35 or a ground-based F-35 out of Korea to execute a mission in the timeliness?
I've got a white paper for you.
Well, I mean, as far as interaction with each of the services, so that you could do a real-time command that says, I've got a dedicated F-35 on the ground in Seoul that will always be there to launch against a launching missile.
So you'd have to have caps. You'd have to have 24/7 combat air patrols.
I'm saying, has anyone done that and then gotten an agreement that it could be done? And I suspect the answer is no, but I think it's worthwhile.
Not to the specificity that you just outlined. No, we haven't looked at F-35 sitting on a runway in South Korea. We have looked at the timelines for indications of warning and intelligence. We've compared that against actual real-world events. We have laid out the timelines to put, whether it's ships or it's aircraft or unmanned vehicles, in the right position to do a boost phase. We have done that math. In fact, when I got Dr. Canavan's math, we took that and compared it against the analysis that we've done.
This question is specifically for the Congressman, but anyone can add to the discussion. The stage of sequestration, continuing resolutions, just a kind of a non-traditional budgeting and appropriations process. How important do you see multi-year procurement contracts on some of the boost-based programs, such as the SM program, some of the other existing programs, to ensure kind of continuity of those?
So to start off, sequester is destroying the military. Sequester is probably sequester has literally caused the death of Marine sailors and soldiers. Okay? So it's got to go. In whatever form it has to go, it has to go. You had a bunch of budget hawks and policy wonks in Congress who thought that sequester was cool because it is mandatory cuts in spending. Got it. I'm a conservative Republican. I understand. It's destroying the military. So that's totally right on your first part. Number two, for long-term projects like this, it's massively important. We just get to, I'm the chairman of the Coast Guard Subcommittee on Transportation, besides my Haskell stuff. I just gave the Coast Guard multi-year procurement authority and block buy authority last year. They didn't have it. So let's just say they're behind the times. It's massively important because it gives the companies and it gives the government the ability to plan out long, to buy what they need to buy early, to take, you know, take economies of scale and make a good purchase and actually start a program and finish it. So yes, I guess, and very important. And I think, you know, I mean, General Mattis comes in and says, and he's been doing this for a long time, sequester, 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 Iran, Iran, Iran. And now it's probably Korea, 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 sequester, sequester, sequester. Right.
John, you want
to... I agree with everything the Congressman said. I think it stabilizes and it does allow us to draw costs down and get more weapons out to the operation.
And I'll tell you, too, just a little caveat, because I'll get up so early in California time. John Boehner had a nice little article in Politico. So I'll be happy to dime out Boehner for a second, too. Six years ago, Boehner sat down with the Armed Services Committee 30 minutes before the Budget Control Act vote and said, this is for the good of the country. It will never go into effect. Put this all in the eye. The BCA and sequester will never go into effect for the military. Out of Boehner's mouth. Here we are. Okay? Boehner had a major hand in crippling the U.S. military as the Speaker of the House when he was here. And that's just a fact. But if your goal in Congress, you could be myopic in Congress too. Just like you can be myopic in anything and focus. And his thing was cutting spending, and guess what? We cut spending. So congratulations, America. Sequester. Yeah.
What?
To get rid of it. So it's very simple for me on the House side, and by the way, we're on the Senate side, and I know nothing happens here or is simple ever. Okay? I understand that. On the House side, I think you put a bill on the floor to lift sequester, to lift the caps, both social, social stuff, domestic spending, and military spending. And then whoever's in charge of the House appropriates and authorizes to whatever level they want to. Just because you look at caps doesn't mean that we're going to authorize or appropriate trillions of dollars over what we bring in. So I think you lift the caps totally, you give the military what it needs, and I'm talking, you probably need a base budget of $700 billion. Base. And it's kind of funny, I've asked three or four SecDefs, what if they had pie in the sky, what would their number be? If they wanted zero risk, nobody ever answers, but zero risk, you're in the trillions. So I'd say $1.2 to $1.8 trillion a year to accept as little risk as possible. That's knowing all the things that we know. How do you mitigate that? It's a lot of money. The base budget should be $700 billion right now plus OPEB. That's what it should be, period. There's no way to get there without lifting sequester. None. And there's no way to do OCO for problems like this. You got to use base budgeting and say, hey, Admiral, here's your money, and here's what we'd like you to work on for a couple of years. Please fix this. Right?
Kind of an obscure question, but since we're talking about cost, Admiral Hill, Dan Washman from James, can you walk us through the new long-range discrimination radar? Why did NBA choose to go with an S-band instead of X-band? From what I understand, kind of the gold standard for discrimination. Is that a cost reason or just better for you guys?
Now, so that's before my time, but I did watch it closely. Lots of trades between radar frequencies and what's better for what. I grew up in the Aegis world where S-band was important for us at sea because it was all about volume search, right? So that same sort of thinking went into long-range discrimination radar. Your ability to do volume search and be less reliant on a queue is why we went with S-band. And the other thing is we had our discrimination algorithms proved out in that frequency region. So we had high confidence that radar would perform, not relying on overhead cues, can get to the target and get track on it. So it's a little bit of a technical trade, but in terms of its operational capability, very, very confident with the S-band capability and with the algorithms that we had in play. Does that answer the question?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just want to say thanks for not asking me that.
You were ready to answer.
Well, thank you, everybody. I mean, I think we're 15 minutes over. Great discussion. Thank you for your candor, your honesty. It's a discussion that we need to have and be public and open about it. We're off to Crete next week for live firing with the Germans with our UCOM, and then we're going to be following the president a couple weeks later into Korea, Japan, Okinawa, Guam and Hawaii, so we're probably going to have another one of these discussions after that, and I just want to thank everybody for your time and effort to come here early this morning, and thank you, all you speakers, for coming from the heart.
We'll do it on the house side next time.
Yeah.